This week on Pop of Culture, we send a rover into the extremes of space to look for life, sort of, while we find out how a museum launches their new exhibits. And later,
we do a really good job at making it feel exclusive. And I think in the past, that may have been what our audiences wanted, but I don't think that's what they want anymore. I think they want to feel at home.
Ideas on how to expand audiences. That's coming up on Pop of Culture.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and by Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
From Indiana Public Radio, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Michelle Kinsey. Later this hour, our co-host Jen Blackmer discovers new ways to bring audiences into arts organizations, or as we like to call it, butts in seats. But first, we live life on the edge at Minnetrista Museum and Gardens.
Hi, my name is Hannah Bender. I'm the experience designer here at Minnetrista Museum and Gardens. Most may have heard of an exhibit designer, and while that is part of my job at Minnetrista, we do so much more. So it really encompasses our experience and our events across campus, and I get to be a part of every single one of them in some form. I'm just involved in all of the design aspects. Everything from designing the layout of an exhibit to maybe a signature event display or all in between things as well.
That's cool. So tell me about your background. How did you get into experience designing type things?
Sure. So I went to school for art and design. I've always been very creative and loved making art, but I actually got into interior design and was doing that for several years before I came here about 6 months ago. So museums are very new to me.
Awesome. What do you love most about your job here?
My favorite part is how hands-on it is and collaborative. I love working with a lot of different people over different departments, and being able to collaborate with them is really important to me. I think it's a more fun way to be creative with other people and to be able to see the fruits of everyone's labors when we get together and see all of our designs and ideas come to life and the public interact with them is really special.
Awesome. Tell us about the current exhibit, Life on the Edge. What will visitors see and experience when they walk through this particular exhibit?
So Life on the Edge is a science exhibit, and when you walk through, you get to experience all different forms of life on our planet and also what could be on others as well. The exhibit is really interactive, so you get to create your own creatures that might come across on other planets, and you get to play with a rover and design the space that it's going to move through on Mars. You get to see different models and what things look like underwater, and just lots of fun interactive elements in this exhibit.
Let's move on to the rover area. All right, so what are we doing here? What do I need to do to play this game?
Okay, so we're going to pick a couple different arrows to help us guide our rover to the blinking light here on the map.
Okay, yeah. So there is a screen, and then there are a bunch of different blocks, and then it's up to just kind of like square blocks, and you put them in the whichever direction you want it to go.
Yes, and once we get there, which it will be worth it when we do, we will see a different creature that we've come across on Mars.
Right, check back in about 2 hours. And perhaps I'll make my way to where we're supposed to be. Obviously, Hannah is taking over because I'm not doing so well.
We're so close.
Really good timing with the eclipse and all, right?
Definitely. Yeah. Yes, for sure.
Everybody's really into everything happening in space, so that's awesome. What do you hope visitors get out of the Life on the Edge experience?
I hope that visitors come in and learn that learning can be fun. I think it's really exciting to come in and have such a hands-on learning experience, and I hope that when they leave, they have the spark to go find different avenues to do that elsewhere. I also think it's really exciting that not only do we have this exhibit, but we have supplemental material that talks about how the Ball Brothers Foundation was involved with NASA and how different satellites were sent to space because of them. So it's really exciting that we can tie it back into our own community as well.
Wow. Hannah, you just blew my mind. It's really true. You learn something new every day. I had no idea about the Ball Brothers connection. That's fascinating. Oh, you want to see? I want to watch him move. There he goes. I think he's trying to tell me.
He's thinking.
Oh, I did it wrong. What did you like most about putting this exhibit together for Minitrista?
I think my favorite part was also the most challenging part. So the components that went along with this exhibit really pushed the limits of our floor plans for the space. So when I was putting it together, it was a little challenging to arrange the elements, but I think because of that, when you walk in, it made it that much more immersive. So that was really exciting.
I just wanted to get him to go in the direction of where we're supposed to explore. Right? Well, hey,
yeah.
That's what science is all about,
exactly.
Right? You don't always get it on the first try. Yeah. You just have to keep trying. We found something. We found natural brine. Brine is very salty water. Salt-loving organisms called haphophiles can sometimes be found in brine. Way to go, Hannah!
Good job.
High five.
Yeah.
Tell me how you feel, because I'm sure you've watched as people have navigated, families have navigated through the exhibit. How did it make you feel the first time you saw a family come through the exhibit that you designed for the space?
I think my favorite part when I saw families interact is how you'd have young children with their parents finding the same amount of joy from a certain component. And something that I found really interesting was to see how when we were putting the exhibit together, we might have found something to be maybe challenging or we weren't sure how it was going to go with the public, but then to see them come in and like click with it immediately and to enjoy it with their son or daughter was just really, really fun to see.
Station or area all about?
Yeah, right now we're at Create a Creature. So we have three different bins here with lots of different animal-like components. So you can build your own creature and then put him on his little planet-like background to kind of represent different types of life that may live elsewhere. So Create a Creature is awesome because it really appeals to like young children, but also like
adults
because we're having a blast. Yes.
And these are wooden blocks, and they're super, I've already found maybe 7 or 8 different types of wings. I've got like a curly tail on the end of my creature and one wing, and I'm trying to find an identical wing. So you kind of have to dig around. Are there any exhibits you're working on or that are coming up that you can let us in on? Any?
Oh yes, I have plenty.
Ooh.
and I'm excited about a lot of them. So if you come before April 14th, you actually get to see all three of our exhibitions that are happening right now. We have Storyland, which we are actually sitting in right now. It's really fun to be in the space. Storyland goes over many different children's books, and it's fun to come in with young children, but it's also nostalgic for adults. So I recommend all ages visit.
Yes.
Life on the Edge, of course. And then we also have the Juried Art Show going on right now, so that's a really great experience too. Family Adventure Day is coming up. That is on March 27th. The Eclipse, as you mentioned, is also
coming. What? There's an eclipse?
Yes, yeah. If you haven't already heard. So that one's really exciting, and it's a 3-day event, so you have lots of possibilities to come.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And then Ball Stores, which is a very exciting exhibition coming up for the community. Ball Stores is going to be very nostalgic for many, and I'm excited to see it come back to life and excite so many people. And that is opening April 27th, so I hope to see a lot of people there.
Oh, that's very cool. And that used to be in downtown Muncie.
Yes.
And yeah, I'm sure a lot of people did their shopping there, so they're going to want to come and kind of relive that.
Absolutely.
History.
Yes.
Wonderful. That's fantastic.
Over here we can see fossils under a microscope.
Oh, I love this. You can spin this wheel
so that all of the different fossils can, oh my goodness, you can see it up on this big screen. Oh.
You can see it magnified or under UV light.
Oh, that's awesome. So if people want to see Life on the Edge or they want to see Storyland and all of these other exhibits, tell me a little bit about when is Miniaturista open, admission, where can they get more information, all that good stuff, Hannah.
Sure. So Miniaturista is open Wednesday through Sunday, 9 o'clock until 5, and you can find out all about our memberships. We have many affordable ones, and they're all on our website, miniaturista.net. It's really a great way to be able to see a little bit of everything when you visit, or you can spread it across a couple days. So you can go there and see when events are happening, when new exhibitions are coming, and find out all of that membership information.
Awesome. And miniaturista.net is the place to go.
Correct.
To see all the exhibits and all
yes.
the information about
yep.
events, because there's always something going on.
Yes, and it will all be there.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for taking time to show us the exhibit and show us around and let us play a little bit with Life on the Edge.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Hannah Bender is the experienced designer at Miniaturista Museum and Gardens. This week, we listen back to a conversation our co-host, Jen Blackmer, had with Jacob Jansen, Artistic Director at Third Avenue Playworks in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. As the person in charge of a professional theater in a very small town, he shared his ideas on rebuilding those post-COVID audiences.
Hi, Jacob. I do know from our own friendship that you did live in Chicago, obviously, for grad school, and that you've also lived in New York. Let's talk about that for a little bit. Did you live in New York before you went to grad school, or was Chicago first and then New York?
No, I lived in, well.
just tell us about your journey.
Yeah.
What brought you to
sure.
Sturgeon Bay?
Yeah, so I went to undergrad in Wisconsin. I got a BFA in acting at University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. Really lovely little school mm-hmm. in the middle of a bunch of potato fields where the only thing to do was to rehearse. And so
right.
that's what we did all the time, which was great for me. And then when I graduated, I always kind of knew that New York was the thing for me. I really have never had much interest in LA just because I don't really like cars very much. Sorry, LA.
Yeah.
So I thought I was going to move to New York, and I ended up getting a job at a restaurant in Cape Cod with the sole point of logic being that that is closer to New York than Wisconsin is. And while I was there, I met a gentleman who was the deputy director of a large living history museum based in 17th century history. And they wanted to offer Shakespeare as part of their public programming.
Mm-hmm.
And we became very close friends. And he just said, hey, how would you feel about running a Shakespeare company at this museum? And I foolishly said yes. I had no idea what that entailed.
Sure.
But I produced, two seasons of Shakespeare for them. And that led me to really starting to work in classical theater for a few years. From that museum, I ended up in Washington, D.C. at the Folger, where I spent a year doing like a year-long internship program with them
mm-hmm.
And followed that up by moving, just across the hill over to Shakespeare Theater to do another year-long fellowship, Shakespeare producing. And then I ended up being a producer at Studio Theater for two seasons. I very much moved from being an actor very quickly. I thought that I was going to be, up on stage, but I found that being a director was the thing that really, really got me going.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of scratched this intellectual itch that performing just never really did for me.
Absolutely.
Performing always feels like a being an athlete. Right? Like you're going out there to make the catch and win the game.
Mm-hmm.
But being the director, there's something a bit more expansive, right? It is a bit of performance, but it is also this sort of like research component and curatorial component. And so I found myself.
World building. Truly. And you know, the arc of the story. So you're not just the athlete, you're seeing the whole field.
That's right. And I found myself in all of these producing positions. And I'll be honest, I was a little frustrated with that. I always wanted to be the person making the shows, but I think it took me a while to recognize just how important the producing part was to my actual experience, because I learned how to make a play by watching other people do it constantly.
Right.
There's no way to learn how to direct a play other than by doing it or by helping somebody else do it. And the producer's job is to make the thing happen. And I learned more about how to direct a play, or in many cases, how not to direct a play, by being in those positions, because you see the sort of pitfalls. Mm-hmm. Or the kind of blind alleys that sometimes you can get stuck in. So I spent a number of years in Washington, D.C., and then decided that it was time for me to focus back on my own artistic practice, and ended up in Chicago. Mm-hmm. There was a weird little interlude where I was in New York for about 6 months, but then got, called back to Massachusetts. So I kind of bounced around the East Coast for about 7 years.
Right. And this is I think, a constant theme with myself as well as folks we've been talking to, is that there's this journey, right? You go to these various places and you do all these things, and you know, part of that journey will take you someplace else and then someplace else. Mm-hmm. And particularly when you're beginning your career, a lot of that is also about building your network, right? You mentioned that you knew this guy who then said you should go do this, and then wound up kind of in these places that maybe you just didn't anticipate, right?
Oh, absolutely. I had no way of knowing that I would end up in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad I did. I loved my time in D.C. It is an incredible arts community. It's the second largest theater community in the country. Mm-hmm. It's enormous.
Yes, it is. There's a lot out there.
There's a lot out there and a lot of really exciting stuff. And part of what was fun about D.C. too is that, in many ways, it is a sleepy southern town. But in other ways, it is a international city, right? Mm-hmm. You've got embassies from all over the world there, ambassadors, cultural attachés, who are all clamoring to get their artists to work, in American cities. And so I had the opportunity to work with all sorts of people from all over the world just through being in that city.
Right. So then you went to graduate school in Chicago at DePaul. And then did you immediately go to New York after that, or did you hang out in Chicago for a bit?
I hung out in Chicago for maybe another year or so, but I had met Andrus Nichols, who was one of the founders of Bedlam Theater, working on a project at the Goodman, and she was in the process of founding a new theater company in New York, and we had spent a lot of nights in the basement of the Goodman in the dressing rooms just talking about projects and art and the stuff that we love to make. And we became very close through that process. So when the new company was being formed, she called me and said, would you be interested in being our producer? And I instantly jumped at the chance, because if you've ever seen Andrus Nichols up on stage, she is just incandescent. I would watch the lady read a phone book. I would be completely enrapt, right?
She's just incredible.
Yeah. And she's just got a really beautiful sort of sense for community. She's always thinking about, how do we uplift the community of artists that we work with? How do we really serve the community in our audience? And I would have been a fool not to go out there and to work with them. And we had one big splashy show, and then the pandemic stopped us dead in the tracks, right?
We did Terra Firma. For most of us.
we did Terra Firma, and it was really great. And we had three other shows that were in process. We were just signing papers to do another project, renting a space. And I think the next day after we got the paperwork, the world shut down.
Yeah.
And for about a year, no one knew what was going to happen, and particularly in New York City. Mm-hmm. And after that year, my wife and I just decided it was time to get out of the city, that, New York is not a great place to have a pandemic.
No.
You know, if you're thinking of places to just like hang out during the pandemic, New York is among the least fun.
So you didn't just leave New York. I mean, you left New York.
Yeah.
And, you know, Door County is beautiful. And I'm, you know, privileged to have had the opportunity to work with you and to work with Third Avenue. But Sturgeon Bay is a small town. So why Sturgeon Bay? What took you there?
Well, I had the very good fortune of becoming the artistic director of Third Avenue Playworks, which is a small regional theater here in Door County. Door County, for those who are kind of unaware, is the peninsula that sticks out into Lake Michigan. So beautiful bluffs rising straight out of the water, gorgeous parks, and then one of the densest arts communities in the country. Because the year-round population in Door County is only 30,000 people, but there are four professional theaters, a really great, you know, performing arts center, a couple of art schools, a folk art school, like a number of classical music organizations. It's really an incredible arts community here.
So when you told friends or colleagues that you were leaving to go to Wisconsin, did you face any kind of a stigma for that? Or did people say, you're crazy, don't do it?
Well, nothing overt. you know, I think in the arts, people recognize that opportunities like this are pretty rare. The chance to, you know, program a season, that's something that, you know, very few folks have the opportunity to do in, you know, any good year. So the chance to run a theater with my own building was an incredible opportunity. And I think that most folks recognize that, you know, out of hand. Mm-hmm. That being said, I think there are some folks who were thinking like, why would you leave New York? You're just getting established here.
Right.
You're just starting to build up a really great network. Stick it out a little while longer and you'll be able to do, you know, things that you never dreamed of. Well, to that end, I will say that though I think some incredible art is made in New York, like truly incredible art is made there. Mm-hmm. There is, how do I put this? Incredible art is made in New York. But the number of people that you end up serving while you make that art, like compared to the total population, is vanishingly small.
Right.
Right? You're making art for like, you know, 1,000th of 1/10th of 1% of the people who, you know, call New York City home.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to a friend of mine who produced there for a while and said that you do art for your friends and your friends of friends and your friends of friends of friends. And that's about it. But it's very difficult with so much happening to, you know, to attract those audiences that we were talking about earlier, which are people who, you know, may not be a part of the community or maybe this is their first play. I mean, that's very, very difficult to do in a community like New York.
Right. And so when I make a play here at Third Avenue Playworks, the number of people in my community that I serve is actually pretty remarkably high. Right. Mm-hmm. So Sturgeon Bay, the biggest city in the county, has about 9,000 people living in it. And, you know, of course, there's a huge tourist trade that happens here every summer. But we sell the majority of our tickets to people who are actually local, who live here for mm-hmm. some portion of the year. And last year, we served over 7,200 people with our performances. Now, in a town of less than 10,000, that means I'm hitting almost everybody mm-hmm. in my community. That level of engagement and that level of impact is kind of unparalleled. There are very few institutions in this country that have as close a relationship with the audience that they serve. And I think that that is something that we all have to be thinking about as theater makers, is how well do we serve our community? Mm-hmm. Because unfortunately, the United States does not really have a theater going culture.
Right, right.
Right. There are some people who do, right? And they mm-hmm. love it. But the vast majority of people in this country rarely see a play. They might see one play their entire life. Mm-hmm. And so I want to work really hard to change that. I want to make sure that absolutely every single person in our community feels welcome, feels like this is their theater and that this is for them. Because I think we do a really good job at making it feel exclusive. Mm-hmm. And I think in the past, that may have been what our audiences wanted, but I don't think that's what they want anymore.
Right.
I think they want to feel at home.
So let's talk about then as an artistic director, knowing that, and I love hearing you say that. I kind of got chills because that's why most of us get into this too, I think. And then there's discussion about legitimacy and all of that, which we'll get to in a little bit. But how do you program a season then for that community, the community that you serve?
Well, there's a learning curve. I mean, I'm pretty new to it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hypothesis about who this audience is. And we program a series of plays and musicals or, you know, experiences, whatever they might be. And we see what their level of interest is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the thing that I have learned in the last, 2 years is that coming out of the moment that we came out of the pandemic, that people were not as introspective as they had been in the past. They didn't want to go into the deep, dark places, mm-hmm. you know, they wanted to come and have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Now that may just be Wisconsin, that may be Door County, that may be the fact that we are a summer theater because that is when the audience is here. And even though they're not on vacation, maybe they feel like they're on vacation and who wants to go have a long dark night of the soul in the theater
sure.
while you're on vacation. I don't know. I would, but
I would too. I think
I'm built different. But what we are figuring out though is people want to be surprised,
mm-hmm.
right? I think there was a theory that was predominant in our field, right? That like, you got to trot out the old chestnuts and make sure that you've got a few things in there that everybody knows because they'll sell tickets. And I think that is, you know, that is mostly true, right?
Mm-hmm.
That if you put a great Neil Simon play in your season, yeah, you'll sell some tickets.
Right.
But the thing is I don't think most people know those plays either.
Right.
They just think they know those plays.
I was like, maybe they did 50 years ago. Maybe it was,
yeah,
they had
right,
much more
exactly.
information about it. But yeah.
Whereas now I think, if you program something that is unexpected, but a ton of fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or, exciting in some way, compelling in some way, audiences will show up. Because I think the desire for pre-awareness of a play or an experience, though that is very helpful, doesn't necessarily sell your tickets.
Right.
I think consistency, I think quality, and I think that care and thoughtfulness about how you are serving your community ultimately are the things that will sell you your tickets. And then I think making sure that you are investing in your artists.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have a theory that the biggest driver for ticket sales are the artists.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine Brad Pitt is in a movie. Most movies that Brad Pitt is in are sold on the simple fact that Brad Pitt is in that film.
That's right.
Nobody knows what that movie's going to be about. Nobody cares.
Yep.
They're just going to go see Brad Pitt be incredibly handsome, right? And
if you think Brad Pitt is handsome, sure.
Well, whatever. I mean, it works for a lot of people, all right?
Sure.
but, you know, I think that theater audiences are kind of the same way. So the thing that I'm working hard on is making sure to carefully cultivate relationships between the audience and these artists, be they performers, directors, playwrights, designers, that they start to, have a feeling for who that person might be. Because I think when you start to do that, you start to make a more durable bond between the theater and the audience,
mm-hmm.
that they feel like they have a longer term relationship with the thing that's happening up on stage. Because the honest truth is that those plays that we've done, we may never do again.
Mm-hmm.
Those huge hits, they probably will never come back. But the person who will come back is that artist.
Right.
And we really ought to do more to take care of that relationship than simply trying to hypothesize what the next great title is for the season.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's about the people more than anything else.
it's not about the building as much as it is the people who work there and the people who perform there and the people who are the storytellers that you can come to expect.
That's right.
You know, will give you an amazing experience, right?
Absolutely. And local artists, the artists who are here, can make incredible performances. They can make incredible experiences. And those folks need to be honored and cherished just the same as, you know, any of the big names or whatever of the big cities. Mm-hmm. That these folks are making great art happen in these small communities. You know, I'm so incredibly proud of the work that we did on A Carrier Heart With Me, the show that we did at the beginning of our year, mm-hmm. that you wrote. You know, as
thanks
part
for
of
the plug.
Wisconsin Festival, of course. Because, you know, we used Karen Estrada, who's a Wisconsin actor, to do the role.
And she was really just phenomenal. I mean, watching her work, I learned more about my play than I knew going into it. Because she is so, so good.
It's so specific and so detailed and absolutely on the level of any artist that you're going to get from, you know, either of the coasts. Mm-hmm. But she's here. She's local.
Right.
And I think that it's easy to think that just because it's out east or west, it's better. It's not. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we really want to we are making a commitment to is we have made a commitment to produce a play by a Wisconsin writer every season going forward. We are doing that.
Good for you. That's amazing.
Yeah, thank you. And we're doing that because playwriting, I think for too long, has been dominated by New York City, right? A lot of playwrights live there. Mm-hmm. We have been told that to be a serious actor, you need to live in New York and you need to chase Broadway, or you need to live in LA and chase Hollywood, right? Mm-hmm. Or to be a serious playwright, you need to live in New York and chase Broadway. Chasing that as the pinnacle of the field, as the sort of the holy grail, I think that discounts the simple fact that there are audiences absolutely everywhere who are hungry for art, who deserve the same degree of rigor and care and thoughtfulness, and who are excited when they get to see it, right? And who are so appreciative right. of that level of care and rigor. And artists as well, right? The artists are also here. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to live in a bed bug infested, you know, 5-floor walk up in New York to be an actor. Mm-hmm. You can live in a beautiful place like Door County and get paid to make art. It can happen.
Yeah.
I'm telling you right now because I know it is happening, right? And we're working hard to make sure that it can happen for more people. The United Way of Door County funded Third Avenue Playworks last year for the very first time. We were the first arts organization ever to be funded by the United Way. We were the first organization ever to be funded by the United Way because we committed to providing low and no cost tickets to our community to make sure that arts were accessible to everyone. Because I think for a lot of folks, they look at a $38 ticket, which, you know, by most theater standards is pretty affordable, and they say, that's too much for me. Mm-hmm. And then they know that that art is not for them.
Right, exactly.
So if we create pathways for people to get into our buildings, then we can make those positive impacts. Then that's, you know, those health benefits, those social benefits can accrue to everyone in our community. And the United Way, when I told them that I think that, you know, theaters should be less like social clubs and more like libraries, they got so pumped up about that.
That's
because
awesome.
I think cultural institutions have to serve our community in the way that the library does, where everyone feels welcome. Everyone feels at home. Mm-hmm. That is our job. That's what we're here for.
That's awesome. That's incredible. I don't think I can top that, frankly. Hey, thank you so much. This has been awesome.
Of course.
That was Jen Blackmer speaking with Jacob Jansen, Jackie and Steve Kane Artistic Director at Third Avenue Playworks in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. Let's find out what local artist Leon Crosby is working on with his entire family. Okay, Muncie artist Leon Crosby, what are you working on?
As a maker in residence at Mad Jack's, I am working on every first Thursday. I just got done doing the design for the City of Muncie's Eclipse show they're doing. I'm really enjoying my time over at Mad Jack's. I'm doing every first Thursday there. I'm also a member of the Muncie Artist Guild. I'm doing some work with Minnetrista, and I'm working for myself.
Oh my gosh, that's a lot. Let's break some of it down. Now, I know that over the years, you've probably been known to many, 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 many people as an art instructor at Cornerstone.
Yes.
Right? So talk a little bit about your time there.
Well, you know, I spent a lot of time there. I was an art teacher for a long time. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed what I did. I taught anime, graffiti, animal drawing, painting, drawing, a little bit of everything, really. I spent a lot of time there, really kind of growing my craft, really getting the hang of it, you know, getting the hang of just being an artist in general. And then I kind of started working my way up into the upper levels of management, and was helping other artists achieve their goals. And mm-hmm. I figured I'd strike out on my own.
Oh, awesome. And is that when you started kind of the Crosby family art, or when did you start the kind of the family business?
That was actually, yes, that's exactly when I started mm-hmm. Crosby Family Art. Right after I left Cornerstone, I won my Mayor's Art Award. I figured that would can be my graduation and my start of my new life as a businessman.
Yeah. So talk about Crosby Family Art. It is like all in the family. Talk about everybody who is involved and what kind of art you're producing.
Yeah, with Crosby Family Art, it's me, my wife, Laura Crosby, and my son, Aiden Crosby. She does fluid art, and so that's that stuff you see on YouTube and Instagram and TikTok. You know, they do their spins and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But then I'm more of a traditional artist, and I paint like, you know, like the Muncie Eclipse, and you know, I'm also a mural artist. And so then we take those designs and we put them on shirts, and we sell prints and mugs at our website. And I also teach classes.
Oh, awesome! And what kind of art is your son into right now?
He is into pixel art.
Oh,
he's a pixel artist.
Very cool.
So yeah, he makes sprites for different games. He worked on some sprite work for Minecraft, and he's worked for some, you know, other, he worked like freelance for Mojang a few times. So yeah. You know, that's what he's doing. And he also runs our entire website and listing.
Yeah. Could you tell people that are clueless like myself what sprite work is?
So like in video games, there's the image of like the old school images of like Pokemon. Yeah. And those were made with sprites, and they were like kind of like little squares, and you kind of fill in the squares to make the colors, and they only have so much range.
Yes.
And so so you have to like be really creative on how you make your sprites.
Awesome. Yeah, I was going to ask about, you know, the type of art that you do, but your work is so eclectic, Leon, that you couldn't answer that question.
I'm traditional in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I use brushes even on when I do murals. So it's mostly traditional, but like I bring a kind of a street edge to it, you know, mm-hmm. and I can do it on really any medium. Yeah. Like the medium isn't a problem for me.
Can you talk about some of the murals that you've done in Muncie, and if there are any beyond Muncie?
Oh yes, my favorite murals are on the Common Market, the jazz players on the Common Market, mm-hmm. on the back of it. And then the Mahatma Gandhi on the side. Mm-hmm. Me and my team are still working on the lettering, so it's still a work in progress. And then we finished a 14th and Hoyt mural park. That was me and actually a bunch of my students at Cornerstone.
Oh,
with the help of Kevin Klinger over at Mad Jack's, we erected that. And then I did a mural on the back of the bathroom at Heekin Park.
Oh.
And it says the Year of Color. Me and my team tackled that. We did some graffiti on the doors of the bathrooms, and then we used the leftover paint to kind of paint the rest of the park.
Oh, cool.
And then I've done a few murals. I've done some murals. Well, I did a mural in my son's room, of course. That's a giant Nintendo mural. I'm trying to think. I've done a few murals inside of Mad Jack's because, you know, I did some things with some kids from Upward Bound. This was probably 10 years ago, 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we tackled a mural at Mad Jack's. Trying to think of all the other ones.
That there are a lot, I'm sure. But it's
oh,
nice
yeah,
to
there's
know
a lot.
That, you know, you can go to all these different places in Muncie and see your work. I think that's super cool.
Yeah, I'm kind of everywhere.
Yeah. Well, speaking
I leave
of,
my mark.
That's right. That's right. Speaking of Mad Jacks, what are you doing over there? What are you teaching? What are you doing?
I'm going to be teaching a graffiti workshop which at the end of the graffiti workshop, we're going to get to paint the side of a shipping container.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
talk
I'm
about
really
hands
about
on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. And when so does that class start?
It's going to be starting in, I think, July, June or July.
Yeah. Awesome.
But as they keep an eye on the Mad Jacks website, you know, it'll be coming up soon.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm super excited about that. We're going to actually get a chance to paint the side of some walls and do some more mural work.
Oh, very cool. So, Leon, when did you realize that you needed to do art, that you were an artist? When did you realize that?
I've always known. My whole life, I was 3 and 4 years old, just kind of sketching and drawing everything I saw. And so my family kind of pushed me in the direction of getting into art classes. And, you know, they bought me paper and lots of pencils. And my mom has spent thousands on paper, pencils, and figures for me to draw.
Sure. What inspires your work these days?
This actually, funny thing, the state parks. I've actually been visiting, I've been making a reason to visit every Indiana state park. And so that's what I've been doing. And I've been enjoying the state parks and nature. And so the nature at the state parks and like the water and the rock terrain and all the different things I'm seeing is really inspiring my work these days.
Oh, that's very cool. So what are your plans? Are you working in a particular medium with the inspiration from the parks, or what are you planning on doing with that?
Well, I'm actually working in inks and watercolors for that. And I'm not really doing much with it. I'm kind of sitting on them and just painting them and just having fun with it. You're kind of enjoying my life right now.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Couldn't ask for anything more.
Enjoying the art life.
Yes.
Yes.
That sounds perfect. That sounds perfect. Well, I know that you mentioned before Crosby Family Art. Where can we see that work? Where could we go to see more of your work and what you do? Like, what is your online presence?
We're on Facebook as Crosby Family Art. We also have a website. It's crosbyfamilyart.com. My wife likes to say it with a jingle. but you can find us there. I'm also on Instagram as leon.crosby.
Great.
So I'm pretty easy. My online presence is out there. Pretty easy to find.
Awesome.
And people can always email me, call me. I'm like really, really cool. I do commissions. Yeah. I love working as an artist. So.
Oh, great. And before we go, we should talk about the really cool, kind of almost graffiti inspired, would you say, Eclipse shirts you have on the site now?
Yes, yes, yeah. Yes. And so they're very graffiti inspired. That's kind of my style. I kind of carry with me my whole life. I drew actually when I started off. I kind of started off very classical art, and then I saw graffiti art popping up in the 90s and late and early 2000s, and really wanted to get into it. And so I kind of talked to some artists, and they taught me how to do it. And I went out and learned the hard way. But then I really enjoyed the learning process in graffiti. And so I try to bring a lot of that to like the old school, just painting styles.
Yeah. Yeah. The shirts are very cool. And you can get them in different styles, and you can have the design that covers the entire shirt or just,
oh yeah.
You know, just
the all over prints are beautiful.
So
yes.
Cool.
I love
so
those.
So cool. So cool. Well, Leon, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us about what you're working on. Really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. I love doing this. So it was great to talk to you guys.
It's time for the Arts and Culture Calendar. Let's find out what's going on here and there. John Mellencamp is live and in person Friday, March 22nd at Ball State's Emmons Auditorium. Tickets at bsu.edu/Emmons. Minatrista is having a glass Easter egg hunt and sale Saturday, March 23rd from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. The hunting will be on the grounds of Oakhurst Gardens. And be on the lookout for the Easter Bunny. Cost is $20 for each glass egg you find and want to keep. More at minatrista.net. The Harmony Players of Jay County, Indiana, will present The Pirates of Penzance March 22nd through 23rd at the Horizon Convention Center in downtown Muncie. Tickets are $10, and showtimes are 7:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday and 2 p.m. Sunday. Tickets available at the door. The Chili Bowl is coming up on March 27th. For $15, you can get your choice of three chilies with toppings, a beverage, and most importantly, a one-of-a-kind ceramic chili bowl made by members of the Ball State Clay Guild. The event will be 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. in the Arts and Journalism Building. There's parking right next to the building. 75% of the proceeds go to Muncie food-related charities. The Indianapolis Baroque Orchestra will perform March 28th at Sursa Hall at Ball State. The orchestra will perform music in the House of Medici at 7:30 p.m. The performance is in conjunction with the spring special exhibition Beyond the Medici, celebrating Italian Baroque art at the David Owsley Museum of Art. Tickets and more info at bsu.edu/DOMA. That's D-O-M-A. And coming up in April, the exhibit Michael Judge, Pentura Vision, will be on display at the Anderson Museum of Art. The exhibit opens April 7th and runs through May 25th. Pentura Vision captures a rare moment in time, giving you the opportunity to eavesdrop on a visually captivating journey spanning four decades across the back roads of America. Michael Judge's work is a unique mix of photography and painting. More info at andersonart.org. If you have an arts and culture event you'd like to share with Pop of Culture listeners, you can do that at indianapublicradio.org/popofculture.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and by Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
And that's our show. This week was produced by our own Mars rover, Luke Jones. It was hosted by me, Michelle Kinsey, with special thanks to our co-host, Jen Blackmer. Pop of Culture is a production of Indiana Public Radio on the campus of Ball State University.